I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Last month, while in town to record her 2019 CBC Massey Lecture, I spoke to Sally Armstrong about the accompanying book, Power Shift, The Longest Revolution. It is published in conjunction with the lecture tour she did up in Whitehorse here in Vancouver, and then as she went on to Fredericton, Montreal, and Toronto. Each lecture was recorded and will air shortly on CBC Radio's Ideas. The premise of her lecture and this book is that the lot of women has been getting better, and that the status of women is directly linked to the collective society's survival and thriving. When women get some education and health care, the whole of society improves. Ms. Armstrong draws on up-to-date research, social science, literature, anthropology, and economics. She looks at the role of women and how that's been obscured in the past and what that has meant for how we view certain statistics or the history itself. It's an engaging book, and I'll get Sally to tell us more. Sally Armstrong is the award-winning author, journalist, and human rights activist. She is the author of numerous books, including Ascent of Women, A New Age is Dawning for Every Mother's Daughter, which she was last on the program with back in 2013. She has covered stories in conflict zones like Afghanistan, Bosnia, Somalia, Rwanda, Iraq, South Sudan, Jordan, and Israel. She is a four-time winner of the Amnesty International Canada Media Award, the recipient of 10 honorary degrees, and is an officer of the Order of Canada. SallyArmstrong.com is the website for more. This new book is published by House of Anansi Press. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Sally Armstrong. Ms. Armstrong, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So you must be asked why it's been such a long revolution. And I guess the question that I have as I started the book and now as I finished it is why not earlier?
Well, we looked at that, didn't we? I mean, not only earlier in terms of the first wave of the women's movement, which was getting the vote, or even the second wave during the 60s when we put all our faith in the pill and said, I want to be an astronaut,
mm-hmm.
or even the third wave, that's when Anita Hill took on Clarence Thomas in the decision in the United States, making him a Supreme Court justice, and she was the one who started the arguments and statements about being sexually harassed, and that was like an awakening for the American women, but we didn't even get liftoff then. But this wave, the fourth wave, which really coincided with the birth of social media in 2012, this is the one that's getting liftoff. And you wonder why it took so long. And I must say, Joe, even for 10,000 years, you can find people trying to alter the status of women throughout that period of time. Really brave, interesting, smart, energetic women who knew things were wrong. So let's go back to the fourth wave. Why did it get liftoff? I believe it's because this was intersectionality. This is the time they got all the women together.
Mm.
Women who'd been marginalized in the past, the indigenous women, women of color, LGBTQ, poor women, disabled women, all women, because we began to understand if we don't go together, every single one of us, we're not going to get to the finish line. So this really created hashtag feminism. This is where we got a hashtag me too, hashtag times up. And in the book, I talk about the analysis of what we call new power. And it's a new way of approaching things. And the authors of a book called New Power,
right.
Interestingly enough,
yeah.
They compare old power to currency. You get as much as you can, you hoard it, you download it, you keep it, you don't share. And the new power, they say, is more like a current. The more it surges, the better it is. The more people there are, the better action you get. And it uploads and shares and goes public. And they say that the fourth wave of the women's movement is really about new power. And that's what I believe is going to take us the rest of the way.
You also write in the book, though, that in times of populists, the lot of women is often not good. We're living in a time of Donald Trump, and this has sort of gone in concert with one another, hasn't it? And so one wonders, are you still hopeful in the age of Trump?
Well, I'm glad you raised that issue because I am very hopeful. And, you know, I often think that Donald Trump is the worst thing that happened to us, and he's also the best thing that happened to us. because he lit a fire under the women's movement. I mean, women the world over marched in response to the things he said about women, and people the world over are appalled. And you know, there are other populist governments. I mean, look at Brazil, look at the Philippines, Hungary, Poland, even Italy is, they're showing these really backward policies toward women. But the women are reacting. And I am convinced that the women will pull this back again. You point a problem, and it's a problem that's very serious. I mean, just imagine that the President of the United States would speak about women in a negative fashion because they're menstruating, or because they're tall, or because they're not pretty in his view. This is pretty shocking stuff. But I believe that populism, as it affects women, is about mostly about powerful, misogynist, white, Western men.
And so how do you change the attitudes of men, not just those men, but men all over?
Well, I think for those men, you vote them out. And I think, I hope that that's what's going to happen. Certainly with the election of the new president of Slovenia, she gave her acceptance speech in five languages, and they were the languages of the very people her predecessor was putting down, people he didn't want in his country. So, I can see this change already happening. I can see women the world over responding with their own level of protest that is making changes.
So some men, I mean, I know some of these men, unfortunately, and they'll think that equality means that they lose something of theirs. That's not true, isn't it?
Well, you know, isn't it amazing? Because you hit the nail on the head. I know that when I spoke with men in Afghanistan, they had some bizarre notion that if they gave human rights to women, it would mean they would give up their own human rights. I mean, can you believe this? But there is a level of that, even with the young executive men in our own finance communities, there is an attitude, and that has to change. And I think it's changed a lot more lately. But we've got a distance to travel.
Indeed. The one chapter in the book that I found fascinating, A Holy Paradox, it talks about religion's role in the subjugation of women. One might read that and say that this is the reason why there shouldn't be organized religion. But you know, then again, I'm thinking, if we got rid of religion today or in the past, something else would have filled that void. And it would be still the same, wouldn't it?
Well, maybe it would. But, you know, what I felt enormously fortunate about in doing the research for this book is they are now reexamining the past. The anthropologists and archaeologists who did the early research on, like, the Stone Age, they only looked at men. So they sidelined the women, not on purpose. That was the style at the time. They only looked at men. So all our presumptions from there on have been based on flawed information. And so we see through the reopening of these files, we see, for example, that Man the Hunter is bogus and that women's history is flawed. So once we look at that, then we can see how patriarchy was born about 10,000 years ago. Religion came along after that. And what patriarchy didn't do in terms of the subordination of women, religion did. And then we had codified laws, and they certainly closed that loop.
Yeah, that's a fascinating part, too. The first part of the book is you look at the early part of civilization and prehistoric times. I'm jumping about here because there's just so much to talk to you about. In your years of reporting, not just for this book, but you're throughout your career, you've witnessed good and bad, the terrifying, the triumphant. This time is different, isn't it? I mean, I may not be optimistic, but you are.
This time is different, but I've been seeing it for a long time, and I'll tell you what got me thinking this way. Let me put it this way. We've always used political will and public will to change up the agenda. You know, we march, we sign petitions, we raise the roof about a condition we're unhappy about. And then that pressures the politician to use political will to make the change, to put in the stop sign, to build the shelter, to rewrite the law. But what I'm seeing, Joe, all over the place now is personal will, and it's mostly around young women and a lot of young men, but I'm seeing it mostly with young women. And these are people who are saying, what you're doing is not okay with me. Mm. And this is incredibly empowering to people who follow. I mean, they will say, this is what I want. Now, I saw this in terms of, well, you could see it in terms of Malala Yousafzai. She said, I want to go to school. The Taliban said, you go to school, we'll shoot you. Those cowardly thugs did exactly that.
Yeah.
But she recovered. And she didn't start a world movement and become the world's daughter because a politician in the Swat Valley spoke about education for girls. She didn't even do it because the public will in the Swat Valley was on her side. It was personal will that did that. And I've seen examples, and I use them throughout the book, of personal will really making sustainable change. And I think this lovely Greta Thunberg, mm-hmm. who we're hearing in action now, is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, and I guess this builds into where women are needed, and that's the political arena. Is that something that in the next 2-3 cycles maybe we'll see greater improvement?
Well, I believe we will, but it is stalling, isn't it? And what most people claim you need is a 30% presence, and they say at 30% you change the culture. And we seem to be stalled between 23%, 27%, but I believe we're moving in that direction. Mind you, you know, as people wise up around the world, they're looking at politics and wondering, is that the place for them? Mm-hmm. I think the way we dress up politics is one of the things perhaps we should be more concerned about. There's way too much misinformation, there's way too much outright lying, and, you know, you get the impression all they're wanting to do is tear down the other person. And I don't think that's the way the world likes to work. I think what they want to hear more about is, what are you going to do about my problem, which is the environment, which is my salary, which is my nutrition? And we seem to be getting away from that. So perhaps it's women who can change that. Certainly we need to move to the 30%, though, to change the culture.
And the pay gap, I mean, that's something that affects all of us, where we work and the sort. I mean, and that's something that I mean, we can all address in our own workplaces, say, right?
Well, we can. And you know, one thing, this financial wizard in my book, Donna Yule Schultz, she reminds that all women have power that they never use. If you are registered in a pension plan, you have power because your pension plan, the money is invested in companies. And as an investor, you have every right to go to that company and say, what is your policy on hiring women? What is your policy on sexual harassment? What is your policy on equal pay? And, you know, when you think about it, for heaven's sakes, it's 2019, and we don't pay equally. Some countries have now made it a law. But do you know that very popular Netflix series called The Crown?
Oh, yeah.
The brilliant young actress who played Queen Elizabeth was paid significantly less than the guy who played Prince Philip.
Yeah.
And you know that in Buckingham Palace today, the women are paid less than the men for doing the same job. So it's everywhere. And it's pretty darn shocking. So I would like to take on the CEOs of companies all over the world and say, what the heck do you think you're doing? I mean, we don't have to do one more study that proves that if you have women on board, you're going to have a broader mandate. You're going to make more money. It, everything shows that it's more successful.
Now, Sally, as part of the CBC's Massey Lectures, you're traveling, obviously. I've caught you in the middle of between going from the Yukon to do an appearance here in Vancouver shortly. What has that been like? I mean, other than the travel and the preparation, I mean, it is a great honor, isn't it?
It is an enormous honor, absolutely enormous. And it's an enormous job because the Massey Lecture is people who organize this and have done it for years, they expect the best and the latest research. And your job is to find that and then put it together in a way that you can deliver it in a lecture series. So while I'm very honored, I'm also, I am overwhelmed by the amount of work that it takes to deliver what a Massey lecture really is. So now that the book is written and I'm on the road with it, can you imagine what a pleasure it is to meet audiences full of people who you're preaching to the converted in most cases, people who are interested in new information, people who want to know what the latest analysis is, and certainly people who understand that if you sideline women, you're sidelining probably the best health care, the best neighborhood action, and the best community work.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. As I was reading the book, it is very timely. It must have gone to press in a very short time because of what's in it.
Well, it is timely, but you know what? I think the best part, as a person who has covered women's issues in conflict zones for almost 30 years, what this means to me, when the Masseys want the topic to be women, it means to me that women are in the zeitgeist. And now that we're there, now we're going to make significant changes that are good for everybody.
Sally, you're someone that a lot of people admire, both professionally and personally. You know, I've read your stuff over the years and have come to admire you as well. Who do you admire? Who are the people that you look up to, say?
Well, thank you for that lovely compliment. You know, I have enormous admiration sometimes for well-known people, sometimes for people I meet for the first time. People who have a curiosity about tomorrow and people who feel empowered by how they can contribute to making change. I love listening to people who have new data and an understanding of men and women and society in general. And as I said, whether they're great orators, I'm thinking of Dr. Seema Samar in Afghanistan or Sipiwe Halope in Swaziland, they've now changed their name, I guess, to Iswahili, or not Swahili, Iswahiti.
Mm-hmm.
But I have listened to fine people with a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge. Hillary Clinton is another one. Michelle Obama would be another one. But I spend most of my time talking to the women and girls in the village. And to see a young person stand up, like this Greta Thunberg is now doing, that's what I like the best.
By the way, have you, over the years, developed a taste for kippers?
No. I have at least tasted it.
Yeah.
Soon after I saw my brother having it, I said, what about me?
People listening to this might not know what that's in reference to. They should pick up the book for because you talk about that at the beginning. My parents are Filipino, and so dried fish is something that they ate all the time, and I can't stand it. And so I'm wondering if when one grows up, whether it's something that they, you know, they take, you know, a liking to, but I guess not.
Well, it's not something that would turn up in my kitchen.
Indeed. Sally, it's such a pleasure talking to you again. Congratulations on all of this and the book as well. I hope more people pick this up and take the message that you've taken to heart.
Okay. Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
The book is called Power Shift, The Longest Revolution, and look out for the airing of the Massey Lecture on CBC Radio's Ideas. That's coming up shortly, I believe the first or second week of November. CBC.ca will tell you more. House of Anansi Press is the publisher of Power Shift. Its author, Sally Armstrong, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.